This is the Jewish News Podcast in association with Genesis Philanthropy Group, supporting Jewish communities worldwide. I'm Justin Cohen, and coming up on this special edition of the programme, we take a deep dive into this year's headlines. From the convoy of hate riding down the Finchley Road to the moment Louise Ellman was welcomed back into the Labour Party with a standing ovation. From our agenda-setting and, I would say, life-saving reporting on the breaches of lockdown in parts of Stamford Hill to our 50th anniversary celebration of Fiddler on the Roof. And from the death of the iconic Jackie Mason to the landmark report into racial inclusivity in the community. And if all that wasn't enough, following this week's comments from the chair of JNF UK, we asked whether Jews really do have a future in the UK. So all very simple topics, really. Joining me to tackle all of that is foreign editor Mike Daventry, political editor Lee Harpin, supplements and magazines editor Bridget Grant, and the big cheese himself, editor Richard Ferrer. Mike, if I can come to you first. I know you want to talk about the Israel-Gaza conflict in May of this year. Once again, we saw a huge rise in anti-Semitic incidents on the streets of London. But if you focus, first of all, on what happened actually in the Middle East.
Well, this does happen once every couple of years, sometimes a little bit more frequently, actually. May is a particularly tense time for Israel and Palestine. It's the month of Israeli independence, normally, because the Hebrew calendar sometimes doesn't align. It's also Al-Quds Day or Nakba Day. All of these things coincide at once. So and the weather is better. And so emotions begin to run high around that time. And so Israel-Gaza flare-ups, where you have the southern Israeli settlements on one side and you've got a territory controlled by Hamas on the other side, with rockets coming in one direction and airstrikes in the other. May tends to be where these things happen, and this year wasn't an exception. It was bloody, because these things always are. 12 civilians were killed, and all of them Israeli. There was an Indian and two Thai citizens. 256 people in Gaza were killed. But beyond even that, I mean, that's a gruesome picture in itself. But beyond even that, you had a reaction in Israel, which is something that we don't really see very often in these when these conflicts break out between Israel and Gaza. It was the intercommunal violence that broke out that took a lot of people by surprise. In regular Israeli towns where Jews and Arabs for decades have been living, perhaps not necessarily with friendly relations, but certainly peacefully with each other, all of a sudden you had scenes of violence, of looting, of rioting, of Jews and Arabs going into each other's homes and businesses simply because of each other's identities. And that was something different, which is a grim stat, really, for the year. And that there are more positive things that we can talk about to outweigh it. But that is one of the standout events of 2021. The fact that there was intercommunal violence and a lot of rioting on the streets of Israel proper.
One thing about that, though, Mike, was that was a very intense period of maybe 3 or 4 days, certainly not longer than a week. And then things seemed to go completely quiet. And there was a lot of speculation at the time that this was, you know, the bringing out finally of simmering tensions. But things have gone quiet on the streets. Are they actually quiet, or does it just appear to be that way?
The thing with these things is that it tends to spiral. So you'll have a trigger. In this case, it was the violence between Israel and Gaza. And you had rockets being aimed from Gaza as far north and east as Jerusalem, which was a rare event in itself. And then those rockets triggered angry protests on the streets, and there were counter protests, and these things began to spiral. The simmering tensions have been there for decades, because Jews and Arabs, and whether or not they're able to cohabit in this same strip of territory, has been a conflict that's been going on for decades and centuries. The question of whether or not it's all gone away, I think the answer is it hasn't gone away, but the fact is that there isn't a trigger anymore for them to send people out onto the streets. And one of the positive aspects of this story is the fact that there are now Israeli Arabs in government in Israel. They actually took government the month before the violence, and they survived in government. There is an Israeli Arab party, the United Arab List, or RAM, to quote its Hebrew initials, And the Mansour Abbas, the leader of that party, has been supporting the Israeli government, has supported that Israeli government's policy on Palestine, and it survived the year. So you could argue that the tensions have always been there and they haven't changed, but it hasn't got worse, even if it hasn't got much better.
And Richard, I know you want to talk about some of the impact.
Yeah, when temperatures rise in the Middle East, it tends to rise here, of course, in the UK. I just want to go back to what Michael was saying about the conflict in Israel, because I think, you know, a picture paints a thousand words and all that. My image of the year just came to mind when Michael was talking about the rockets, you know, Israel's umbrella, the Iron Dome defense system, with that image of those swarm of Iranian missiles being fired by Hamas from Gaza and then the Iron Dome intercepting them. Really, that, I think that was the picture of the year for me, and certainly something that will live with me for many years to come. In terms of here in the UK, yeah, of course, 600% rise, I believe, in anti-Semitism in May and June as a result of the conflict, and another visceral image for me was this car convoy that drove through Jewish North London that still chills the bones. This vehicle from the Convoy for Palestine driving down the Finchley Road, blasting their horns, screaming unspeakable obscenities in the heart of Jewish London. It's important to state, of course, all four of these suspects who have been in court deny all the charges. We will be outside court in the new year following this case closely.
I think that leads us on rather well to a topic that Lee's going to lead us off on, and the issue of the future of the Jewish community in the UK. It's something that's obviously flared up in particular this week in light of comments from the chairman of JNF UK. But Lee, how did you react to those comments when you first heard them?
I was actually quite shocked that anyone could be so outspoken and so definite as to say we as Jews have no future in England. I think he actually meant the wider UK. And I think he was speaking about the 400,000 odd Jews that currently reside in this country. Now, I thought it was interesting to look back on the year, as Richard has mentioned, and you've mentioned as well, Justin, because if we isolate, if we look at, you know, May, we see a very worrying, troubling incident such as the car convoy. More recently, we see the again, worrying, troubling Hanukkah bus incident, which police are continuing to investigate and hopefully will bring the suspects to justice. So there are, you know, several worrying incidents. If we look on social media, if we want to find anti-Semitism, it really isn't very hard. If we want to find taunts and threats to Jews in UK, it isn't very hard either. But then I think step back and let's look overall at the picture for UK Jewry in this country. And having spoken in the last few days to some senior communal leaders, I know lots of them share a similar view. But ultimately, I think it's very wrong to say Jews have no future in this country. I think overall we have a very bright future in this country. And I think overall a lot of us are doing well, quite well, okay, and are quite happy. And I can only look at my own existence. I live in the Willesden area, northwest London, a very multicultural area. Several mosques, my synagogue, which I must admit I haven't visited nearly enough over the COVID period, and various other ethnic minorities. When I go to shul, do I worry about wearing a kippah in the open? I don't. Do I hear other members of the congregation worry? I don't. Over this year, do I hear of incidents of people being taunted, abused? I haven't. Obviously, I don't want to speak out of turn now. And it's also, you also worry that as soon as you start saying this sort of stuff, you don't want, you think the worst. So, but I think this is an illustration of the sort of lives most people still lead in this country. I think we have a government, you know, whether you support the current government or not, who have made it their interest, made it their concern to look after our well-being and do put a lot of time, thought, and indeed money into looking after us. I think you look at our communal organisations, the CST, who are brilliantly funded by government and the job they do. You look at the Board of Deputies, who are led, I must say, very well at the moment by Marie van der Zyl. You look at the Jewish Leadership Council under Jonathan Goldstein, the outgoing chair. And I think if you would speak to any of these people, you would find that they too share the view that that we should be very proud as Jews to be living in the UK, proud of what the UK does to us, and proud of what we give back. So I do take offence to the comments made by the JNF UK chair, Samuel Hayek.
Whenever people have mentioned to me in the past that have suggested that this is a dangerous place to be Jewish these days, and very often that suggestion comes from Israelis, where I think the media really does latch on to every single anti-Semitic incident in the UK and really blows it up quite big. Whenever I've heard that, I've simply pointed them in the direction of Hanukkah in the square. I think, you know, for thousands of people on an annual, normally, basis to be celebrating Hanukkah in the open, protected by the CST, by the police, yes, but with the Mayor of London, with other community leaders, singing with the menorah next to the Christmas tree, for me, that really sums up the real life of British Jews in that's my take.
Yeah, I spoke to another communal leader yesterday. He pointed out to me, you know, what other city in the world, including in Israel, can one dine out in the open in the summer at a kosher restaurant without the need for security? And that is still the case in London. You know, we can still sit in Golders Green outside. We can sit at kosher establishments elsewhere outside, and we don't need security. So I do think we have to be very careful about turning this whole, there is obviously there's anti-Semitism out there and there is a rise, but we need to put it into perspective.
But there's no one on this present conversation who is either Hasidic, and there isn't anyone representing the university student community, because they do have a harder time at university. There is worry for some of them about what they've faced in terms of, you know, Israeli leaders from coming to talks, for, you know, just being ridiculed. There's been lots of stories about that. So I think if you're a university student, or if you're Hasidic and walking about, maybe your experience isn't as beautiful as Hanukkah in the square. You may face more day-to-day comments and difficulties than we do as quite secular group of people.
I would hate to think that the travails of our Jewish students on campus should sort of malign the Anglo-Jewish experience, which I think is a phenomenal one. Far from being beleaguered, under siege, Samuel Hayek's picture of British Jews, cowering for the future. We've never been louder and prouder. And Justin's right. Hanukkah in the Square, Limud, which is next week, JW3. There are so many examples of what the brand of Anglo-Jewish life is all about. And I include Jewish News in that as well. We try and be as loud and as proud as possible. Now, of course, if you are physically identifiable as Jewish, or you're a Jew on a campus without a sort of an active without an active JSOC, you are going to feel that. But then, you know, I was a Jew on campus in the 90s. I also felt that. But yeah, I think Anglo-Jewish life today is vibrant and an example of modern, inclusive, a culture that can integrate in a positive way.
Yeah, it's interesting though that David Baddiel's Jews Don't Count has had the success that it's had, though, in spite of what you're saying. Because there are lots of areas of even in television, in fact, where the commissioning of programmes that are, I mean, as Tamsin Greg pointed out just recently about being in Friday Night Dinner, there is a level at which it's acceptable to be Jewish on television. And that's still, unless it's accompanied by klezmer music, that it's very much played down, and that you don't see the kind of, you know, the showy easiness of American Jewish comedy on British television. So working in, you know, and I am obviously doing more of that, I would argue that we've still got quite a long way to go.
I would also just say that Samuel Hayek's comments can't be justified in the way they were put. I assume that they were based partly on polling that has taken place in the past that shows a higher than average level of anti-Semitic attitudes within parts of the Muslim community. And on that subject, I think we've seen further stories this week, or further stories this year rather, that points to some of that. You know, Azam Rafiq's comments that were revealed, the fact they echoed in some ways the experience of Naz Shah, both of whom lived in communities that don't generally have contact with Jewish communities. And the truth is that, you know, while most of the Jewish community is in London, and while a lot of the Muslim community is not in London, and there is a lack of contact, that vacuum does breed a lack of knowledge. And that is something that I think needs to be tackled and really focused on as one of the most important things that needs to be dealt with. But we are pressed for time, and if I could move on to the political scene very briefly, Lee, we've seen an improvement, a significant improvement in the actions of the Labour Party under Keir Starmer, a lot more recognition of the steps that he's taken, but also that still needs to take in order to address anti-Semitism within the Labour Party. And I know you want to draw attention to one specific figure within this whole saga that has now rejoined the Labour Party.
Yeah, I particularly want to bring up the case of Dame Louise Aylman. Firstly, because we broke the story of her return by about 2 minutes online before it was officially announced. Secondly, because I rang her the week before to ask her if she was planning to return to the Labour Party and be unveiled at Labour conference, which was taking place a week later. She said not, and she was telling the truth at the time, because within that week, Labour Party leaders and Keir Starmer actually made contact with her. And as the world saw, as the country saw, and as we reported on our front page, I think it was the picture of Louise and Keir Starmer was amazing. I think it was a Press Association photograph that we used very well on our front. I think it just symbolised, you know, it was a return. So basically, a bit of background on Louise, for those who don't know, 50 years in the Labour Party, staunch Labour Party, led Lancashire Council, but in Liverpool Riverside, her constituency, ever since Jeremy Corbyn came to lead the party, she was faced with real difficulties at local meetings, week in, week out. Basically, the sort of people that possibly were connected with organisations like the Militant Tendency in the past, rejoined Labour, and they picked on Louise specifically around the fact that she had issued pro-Israel comments in the past, and she'd been involved with LFI and organisations such as that. Within weeks, she was taunted almost, you know, regularly over her support for Israel. Questions were put to her about her loyalty to the country, the sort of questions that if they were made to a black person or you know, an Asian person, there would quite rightly be outrage over. So she faced this week in, week out. Weeks before the 2019 election, Louise quits the Labour Party, citing Jeremy Corbyn's failure to tackle anti-Semitism. Many people thought she'd never come back, but I think it speaks volumes to the efforts that Keir Starmer and those around him have made to tackle this issue. Starmer said that he would make tackling anti-Semitism his number one priority. Many people were sceptical, including myself. I think his record shows that he has indeed, some may say, made fighting anti-Semitism one of his only obvious priorities, because many people would say he needs to speak out a bit more on other issues as well. But anyway, we get to conference. Louise Aylman takes the floor standing ovation during Keir Starmer's speech. Luckily, I was also able to be with Louise as we walked round. It was her first time at conference, walking round, seeing people she hadn't seen since she quit the party. And, you know, I actually felt very emotional seeing people, union bosses, MPs, people that just coming out and they were hugging, tears, etc., etc. And I think it said a lot for the work that that Starmer had done and how it had succeeded. Obviously, there's a lot more to be done, as we know. There's still anti-Semitism that needs to be rooted out across local parties throughout.
As you say, Lee, Starmer's recognised that there's still a long way to go, and that party conference was an example of that. There was not unanimous support for the rule changes, even though they were mandated by the HRC, for example. When we're talking again next year on this podcast, what would you like Starmer to have done in that period of time in the next year?
Well, I think expulsions take time, despite what some people think. And, you know, people being expelled ring up lawyers, processes can be delayed, and it's often very tricky just to get rid of people. But I think there are still a small number, and I do believe it is a small number of people, who will face expulsions over the next year. So I think that will improve the situation further. But I also think there's a need for education, and I think that's one of the areas that Labour are pushing. Groups like the Jewish Labour Movement are now involved in holding sessions, training sessions. It's very important because I think there are people out there, and you know, all of us encounter them. I think in May, when the Israel-Gaza situation was going on, you have debates with people that you call friends, and they'll say stuff about Israel and overstep the mark, and it will become comment about Jews in general. And a lot of times, I think people don't recognise what they're doing. So I do think training and education is as big a part, perhaps even bigger part, than the continuing expulsions, which I do believe Labour will conclude through over time. So I think this time next year, we'll be looking at a very different Labour Party. Would it get rid of anti-Semitism completely? I don't think any political party will ever be completely free of racism, anti-Semitism. You know, if any political party was put under the same scrutiny that Labour have been, we'd find racism, anti-Semitism. But I do think, hopefully this time next year, we will be in a place whereby we can think, whose policies do I think more of? Whose policies do I support? What policies don't I like? And hopefully anti-Semitism.
Bridget, I think we need a bit of light relief at this point. We've talked about politics and we've talked about anti-Semitism and the state of the Jewish community in the UK. You organised a fantastic celebration, I'd say one of the biggest online events in the Jewish world during the pandemic, when Fiddler on the Roof celebrated its 50th anniversary.
Yeah, it was an extraordinary moment to regroup the entire cast of the original film, apart from, sadly, Chaim Topol, who we subsequently heard from his daughter, who was part of the panel that we organised, that he isn't well, certainly not well enough to participate. But it was picked up by absolutely everybody. They sang from the movie, the sisters together, and it was a truly moving experience. We had Joel Grey introduce it. He'd done the Yiddish version of Fiddler in New York, and that's being resurrected next year as a tour in America. And that was amazing for us. It really was. And of course, being able to bring back another great thing was that we saw the third and what will be the final season of Shtiesel, which everybody was thinking, oh no, there's going to be another one. They haven't been bold enough to admit that there won't be, but in fact Dikla Barkay, the producer of Shtiesel, has told me that there won't be another season, and unfortunately. But it ended magnificently, and if ever a season of any show, and we've all witnessed things like The Sopranos at the end and stuff like that, but it was a thing of great beauty. We're still in contact, and in fact the company, Abbott Barkay, are doing a new series with America about the life of Netanyahu, which they've been busy working on. And although Fauda stopped, and it wasn't probably the best time for them to do any series that was kind of Gaza related in view of everything that went on, but they've just started filming their next season of Fauda. So that is something really, you know, that everyone looks forward to. And more Israeli programming due to start here in the new year. And based on what people tuned into over these past 2 years, you know, it's been a big time for Israeli production, and all of it of a very high quality and standard, including we'll be seeing Gal Gadot as well as Cleopatra. So that will cause a few debates, no doubt, as well. But we were sad, finally, really, to say goodbye to Jackie Mason, who had been a regular on the paper, and to lose his wit and his kind of controversial opinion, being a devout Republican as he was. We were sad about that, because it was a pleasure to have him. But he maligned the loss of comedy due to the very woke comedy world. So I think that he had the greatest time in his early years. And maybe we'll see a bit more less woke comedy in the new year.
Justin, I'm sorry to jump in, but it's been a very exciting year for Israeli and Jewish drama. It's also been a very exciting year for video on the Jewish News's website. And we talked about Louise Ellman and that moment when Keir Starmer acknowledged him. We put that up, and that was viewed very well, particularly that 25-second standing ovation that she got in the hall. But the biggest video of the year on our website, out of everything that's been up there, it was the Conservative Friends of Israel and the prize, the present that Boris Johnson was presented. He was given a menorah because it was Hanukkah, and you give the visiting prime minister a menorah, don't you? What did he do? 3 seconds later, he waved it in the air and broke it. Watch it on the website if you haven't seen it.
Oh, God. Oh, things are bad. That bodes well, doesn't it?
And Bridget, now you've told the world about the fact that there's going to be no more schtissel, I think you ought to write that story for us before.
Well, the thing is, I've just realised I have told everybody that. But on the other hand, my relationship with the network itself, I'm desperate to keep that sweet. But they know. I mean, look, they know that the story had. It was open-ended, and everyone wondering whether Rahumi lived or died at the end. And there were so many unanswered questions, but I think that's what the writers wanted. And I don't think there's been a show from Israel that captured the world like Shtizel did. It's rare to see that wherever those actors went, whether that, you know, they were getting recognized by people who watched it in India, and you know, Paris people were approaching them. It was everyone wanted to entertain, and the real tragedy of the past 2 years has been that all the things they planned to do was to go and visit and hold panels in different countries. And I think people will never recover from the fact that they won't have Michael Aloni in front of them again, at least not. That he has done a new show, and he's doing stuff in America. But to have that whole panel of Shtizel actors was a joy. And we will all have missed. We all missed out by not seeing them. And no, Justin, don't tell. I've sort of told everyone, but it's...
Sort of is one way of putting it. Good. We've got 5 more minutes. I want to get through 2 other stories. We'll end with possibly the Jewish News' biggest story of the year, which Richard will cover. But first of all, Mike, you've been following the story about Poland and the issue of Holocaust revisionism or otherwise, depending on your perspective. And you recently had a fascinating conversation with a new person appointed by the government to be a Jewish liaison, and they said some rather surprising things.
Yes, they did. I mean, this isn't a very cheerful story, but it's an important one because Poland's got a right-wing government, and there are plenty of issues going on there at the moment, and many of them concern Jews, not just Jews in Poland, not that there are many Jews left in Poland, sadly, but Jews around the world. I'll tick them off very quickly. There was the case of the two historians, Barbara Engelking and Jan Grabowski, who wrote a book about the Holocaust, and in one of the pages, it was only a paragraph, they accused the mayor of a local town of collaborating with the Nazis. And this mayor, who's now passed away, his niece sued the authors, saying that you've defamed the memory of my uncle, and the court ordered the authors to apologise. That verdict was later thrown out in court in an appeals court. But the fact that that historians who have researched and meticulously gone through primary sources and secondary sources to come to their conclusions were ordered to apologise because they defamed Poland's national memory was a big moment. And of course, this is also the year when Poland passed a law on property restitution, which made it practically impossible for Jewish victims and their descendants to claim compensation or to claim back property that was confiscated from them during the Nazi era and during the communist era. And this is also a year when relations with Israel plunged. A low moment was when a deputy foreign minister of Poland said that the school trips that are being organised at Auschwitz is propaganda. But as I say, this is a right-wing government. They've pretty much banned abortion. There are issues with media freedom, huge tensions with the European Union. And in the context of all of this, a couple of weeks ago, spoke to a man who's been appointed by the Polish foreign ministry. His job is basically to improve relations between Poland, and the Jewish community around the world. His name is Jarosław Marek Nowak, and he astonished me during this interview. It doesn't happen very often because, you know, as journalists, you tend to prepare for these things and prepare the questions you're going to ask, and you have a vague idea of what you're going to be told. But he told me that all of the things that I've just listed to you were crazy. He said some were stupid, some were wrong, were giving the wrong impression. And that was a really big moment, really, because it shows that perhaps there is hope. And perhaps Poland's slide, if call it what you want, call it right wing, call it authoritarianism, call it extreme nationalism, perhaps that can be reversed and perhaps things can be different in 2022.
Thank you, Mike. And I always like to talk about Jewish News being more than just a newspaper in various regards, whether it be putting on our own events or campaigning or our many lists that we've become famous for. I think during the last year, we've completed our project identifying the 80 over 80, which was a project that hadn't been done in that kind of guise in this country before. We've continued to campaign on behalf of the Uyghurs, and much else besides. We held, at the end of last year, actually, a Hanukkah lighting event for the ambassadors of the UAE, Bahrain and Israel. But Richard, one of the things where we really had an impact, I think, this year, and possibly a life-saving impact, I'm sure that's the case, is in the issue of the lockdowns and specifically the law-breaking that we saw, unfortunately, within parts of the Haredi community.
Absolutely, yes. I think that, for me, is probably the standout memory of the year. The podcast has already gone on quite a long time. If we carry on any longer, it will be 2022. But in addition to that, there was the David Miller debacle at Bristol University. We haven't touched on that. The professor who accused Jewish students of being pawns in the racist regime of Israel, he's appealing his removal. That investigation went on for about 8 months. We never let that go. I think it was in April, Stephen Bush, the journalist's landmark review into racism in the Jewish community for the Board of Deputies, has certainly influenced the Jewish News' reporting in the community going forward. So I think it'd be remiss not to mention those two. But yes, the domestic story of the year, Justin, our expose into the brazen, I guess is the only way you can describe it, lockdown breaches during the first lockdown in Stamford Hill, and the resultant anger our coverage, not anger at the people that were doing these things against the law of the land, but anger at the Jewish news for exposing them. And there was a resultant call for boycotts of the Jewish news. We got legal letters. Advertisers refused to advertise. Those advertisers still deserve to be named, but I will bite my lip. The impact of that expose, it's important to say, and we expose lookouts being used to raise alarm, money being set aside for fans. I think one bride knowingly had COVID on the day of her wedding, was a significant improvement in the way the crisis was handled by the community leadership. And since then, there's been a lot of vaccine programs and a lot of improvement in that area. So the impact was positive. But yes, I think the reaction from parts of our community, many of whom probably won't forgive us. But despite that, it was probably my proudest story of the year.
Yeah, we did counter it with the fact that we offered unending support to the people that are the simcha makers, the providers of events, who had no work and have struggled over the past 2 years, and that we, you know, supported them all the way along. And you know, we went, we wrote about them, we talked about them, we featured them in at various Passover supplements and Rosh Hashanah. So I do think that we showed our support as well for those who weren't having parties.
Yeah, I actually have to say that when we set out doing this podcast, I didn't realise it had been quite as busy a year as it has been. From Arabs joining the Israeli government, an unprecedented Israeli government, a conflict in the Middle East, conflict between Israel and Poland, the Abraham Accords, which we didn't mention, the lockdown breaking and the Stamford Hill issues, and as Richard said, the improvement there, the loss of many personalities from the world of showbiz, including Jackie Mason, and now ending, I think, quite conveniently on this issue of the future of Jews in England. I think we've decided, though, during this podcast that it's all good and that we're all okay and we all should stay.
Yes. And all this is including happened, Helen Mirren, including Helen Mirren. Including Helen Mirren. You can always play all of us.
And all this has happened while we've been in our homes. We still haven't returned to an office, Jewish News. We've been in our homes the whole time, for the last 50 issues.
As I like to remind people whenever they worry about anti-Semitism, the Jewish people I speak to mostly don't define themselves by anti-Jewish racism. They define themselves by the contribution they make to British life in this country. And long may that be the case.
Here, here.
Sounds like a good point at which to end. So thank you very much for this and for all your contributions during this year to Mike, Richard, to Lee, to Bridget, and to Adam Bradley also for his work on the podcast. And indeed to Leo, our podcast producer.
Happy holidays.